Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
If we're not careful, the Media Project is going to devolve into discussions of old-time TV and
hunky TV stars.
Oh, I could do that.
Here we are. The Media Project is underway. Rosemary Armeo, investigative reporter and professor at the University of Albany. How do?
Hello.
Dr. Alan Chartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
My father used to say that. How do?
How did he? Indeed. How do?
How do? You don't hear much how do's anymore.
And you don't hear that much anymore. And I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Grew up in South Dakota. We said things like that. We were people of few words out there.
Yep.
Tall,
yep.
Handsome.
What can you do?
Man-like.
That's it. Anyway, we have media issues of the week, we hope. Meaty media issues, perhaps. You know, by the way, before we get onto some of the topics that we had planned to talk about, there were congressional hearings last week on Benghazi, which has been an issue heavily covered, mostly by Fox News, with great criticism for other media that we, the rest of us, have ignored it. Do the hearings suggest that the criticism has been justified and that Fox was right all along?
I would say yes. I mean, the hearings are interesting because it raises questions about when the administration knew what they did. It now appears they absolutely knew when Susan Rice was out there in public saying, oh, this was all the result of a protest gone bad, that was not true. They had on the ground reports, including Hillary Clinton talking to people on the ground, that was not true. The person who said it, he's the deputy administrator, I guess, of the embassy, was demoted for saying that. And I think there's even questions beyond that, like the hearing is all centered on reactions when the attack had begun, whether you could have gotten help there faster. But why was there not increased protection before that? September 11th is a time that they, you know, the intelligence community already knows that there are increased attacks. This is Northern Africa. Yeah, I think there's a lot of questions about it.
And apparently they had asked for increased protection.
Yes.
So then the thing is, to what level of public awareness does this rise other than Fox? In other words, how many people really, if you were trying to figure out who cared about this, I want to say this in the most sensitive way I can, that how important is a news story based on an editor's perception as to whether or not the story will excite a lot of people? So, for example, you find these three persevering women who get taken out of a basement, and the press can't get enough of it because we can all sort of attach ourselves to the story. Whereas the Benghazi thing is a little bit more complicated. And it is my sense that while you raise a good point, Rex and Rosemary, with your commentary, I don't think that many people really can associate themselves with it. It's long gone, and
long
I don't
gone.
Think they know.
It was September. It was September. Well, and, you know, you learn in journalism that you don't look at the motives of your sources. You just look at the news. And
you look at the motives, but you don't discount what they say based upon
that's,
the motives.
That's
right.
Saying it
much
better.
You need to be really aware of them.
Uh-huh. Said much better. Mm-hmm. And here we've had two stories recently where the right has hammered on them, and the left, because it's politically politically expedient, has not even looked at them. One is Benghazi, and the other was Rand Paul's tirade, his filibuster, that brought up the whole idea of what we're doing with drones. Why aren't we looking at that?
Well, I would say on Benghazi, one thing is, I mean, to just borrow from children's tales, the guy who cried wolf, you remember the little boy who cried wolf, and nobody believed him, of course, after the third time when there really was a wolf. Fox News is so given to hyperbole, so undependable as a reputable news source, that when Fox News trumpets something, you begin to believe that there's a political agenda. We know that Fox News has a political agenda. It is well known. It is the intent of Roger Ailes to specifically target a newscast that comes from the right. And so if that is your intent from the get-go, then that's what the bias is going to be. I agree that there are stories that should have run that probably didn't. But I'm not so sure, by the way, that at this point we should be so quick to buy everything that we have heard, because from the initial rounds of hearings here, initial rounds, I should say, there have already been, 50 hearings. But from what we've most recently heard, because, again, this is one person's take on it. Yes, someone who was pretty closely involved, but
you better explain to everybody what's
no
happening.
No single source on anything is a valid source. This is, as Rosemary said, the deputy head of mission, I think, in
Benghazi.
Was it in Benghazi or was it in Tripoli? I think.
No, he was in Benghazi.
Anyway, so his perspective is also limited by where he was
and
when he was from.
He is what we call in the business a disappointed office seeker. So, in other words, he was demoted over this.
He says.
That's right.
Well, this is the kind of thing that should have been handled by reporters.
Right.
We are now left to pick and choose what's right and wrong among Fox broadcasts and Hicks's testimony to Congress. Mm. Why is that? Why are we doing this? Because the media, the unbiased, you know, objective media, has not gone in and looked at all the facts and weighed it.
Well,
that's
I have
a fault.
I have to say, you know, I know you guys mean well. But I have to say, there's very little about what's coming out now that hasn't been leaked to the press before. So it's not as if we're all surprised by this. These accusations have been floating around. The press has covered them. I know because I read them and I hear them. So I know that's true. But there's one other issue here, which neither of you have mentioned, which I'm surprised by because you're generally much better prepared than I am for these discussions. and that is the word Hillary.
Hillary.
Yeah.
Now, Hillary is, of course, without beating the horse, a potential probable candidate for president of the United States. And there she was sitting at the top of the hill. So if you wanted to make an accusation that the news was loaded, it might be that here was somebody who could have been damaged by all of this.
Well, it's not that we were ignoring it. It's that was so much implicit in our remarks, we didn't think we had to be that specific.
I see. Well, that's good.
Oh, my goodness.
Good try, Rex.
The Washington Post has done actually a nice analysis of what's actually new from these hearings versus what, as you say, has already been leaked to the press, Alan. And the idea, the fact that Hillary called and spoke to Hicks at 2 o'clock in the morning of the attack has not previously been reported. And that indeed does suggest that there was some sort of a cover-up, perhaps because she was thinking of her candidacy. We don't really know. But why then did she allow Susan Rice to go and on TV that Sunday after the attack and say, oh, it was a protest? There was no protest, according to information she got from her own people on the ground, and then later demoted the guy who was saying that.
I would say
I
would say 9/10 of the people who are listening to this program now have no idea what either of you are talking about.
And whose fault is that?
Well,
fault is that? Is that not the fault of the people listening to the program who have no idea what they're talking about, who have not been paying attention to the stories that have been published to deal with this, have not been paying attention to the stories? I mean, how much do we have to shovel to people? We talk about broccoli and ice cream, about news that's important versus news that people like to get. You're just citing the case in Cleveland. Well, you know,
you are so angry.
I make decisions every day about what goes on the front page.
It's not attractive.
And I have to say that sometimes I feel really nervous about the fact that we are saying, you know, we're a local newspaper. We focus on local news. And, you know, that is our niche. Okay, that's fine. And I do this all the time. I put local news out on the front page, but I do it with the full knowledge of the fact that I'm not giving people a true full picture of the stuff that I think they really ought to know. You know, if we were really being, in my heart of hearts, I really believe that we need to be giving Americans a bigger, Dr. Chartok, turn off your phone. And we need to be giving Americans a bigger dose of news from the rest of the world. We should have been giving them more Benghazi, yeah. But you know, we don't do it because people don't care.
I also have heard you, Alan, talk about how we have dissed, if you will, the story out of Bangladesh, where something like 700 people died in the collapse of a really substandard industrial building.
But
because
mostly,
we can't connect people to that.
Yes, but it's Bangladesh. It's true, because I know I anticipate what you guys are going to say. It's Bangladesh, but it's making our clothing for over
I
here.
I wrote my column about it last week.
Yes,
excuse
you
me.
Yes, you did.
And you know, Rex, I have one column a week, and I devoted it to that.
And you know, Rex, it was an egg. Excellent column, and I think you probably got it right from here. But
no, actually, I did. I was inspired to do it by listening to a Fresh Air program with Terry Gross,
yeah.
Where she was interviewing an author who has written about our disposable society, where what we do with fast fashion is the term mm-hmm. That the author used. Whose name I will come up with momentarily, maybe. But it is really true that we borrow from each other, and in the whole...
We are stimulated by...
Which brings us full circle, because
exactly
we don't borrow from Fox. We consider them tainted, and we ignore it. And we should not have in this case.
It's also a great reason why we... why everybody decries, you know, you get Rachel Maddow on one side, you get Fox on the other side. There's something to be said, even though a good deal of it, as Rex has just pointed out, is no good. It's also a good way of keeping everybody honest by having different perspectives offered.
Now, speaking of the impact of journalism, people borrowing from other people, a few weeks ago in this program, Rosemary made mention of a fabulous story written by Steve Brill, a longtime journalist and publisher, an entrepreneur of media. Steve Brill wrote a story that, a 36-page story in Time magazine, one of the longest stories that Time has ever published. Of course, Time is a different publication now than we remember from our youth. But in that story...
Just to clarify what old man Rex is saying, what we remember in our youth was that Time was biased.
Well,
and you're saying it's less biased.
Well, we remember it as being, a weekly news magazine with a smattering of news from all around the place. And now it's much more analytical and has a broader reach. And so it's not so far out of the ordinary that Time would pick up a major piece written by, in effect, a freelancer. But it was a story that really looked at what was behind healthcare costs, right?
Not who is paying the cost, but why are those costs so high in the first place? It was a totally different view. And as a result, while this is the highest honor for investigative reporting, there was a good result. And the government now, the health department, U.S. Department of Health, has come out with a list that actually tells people how much they will be paying for fees at various hospitals. You can now can compare them.
And it turns out that those fees are wildly disparate in different places.
As Brill reported. And now what they've done is made the whole thing more transparent. It's an absolutely wonderful result from a great piece of reporting.
And so Brill says what he hopes is, he says, quote, "This should become a tip sheet for reporters in every American city and town who can now ask hospitals to explain their pricing.
How about
that?
There's pressure now for the cost to come down. It's great.
That's the value of good reporting, and that took a lot of work on his part. That was deep, issue-focused reporting that was not necessarily about a popular topic or something that gets people's attention, like the kidnappings in Cleveland, which are not unimportant. I don't mean to denigrate that story is significant, but let's just say that when people whine about health care costs, here's a journalist who decided to do something about it by doing some research into why.
And he has, if you've watched his career, he has an entrepreneurial spirit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not only in terms of this story, but in terms of the American Lawyer magazines, the rest of it. And it really does, as I've said so many times on these microphones, come down to one's character. And his character in this is the kind of thing that leads to this kind of exploration.
So anyway, if you're just joining us, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist and professor at UAlbany, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. If you want to be a part of this, send us email, media@wamc.org. media@wamc.org is us. And, you know, there's another program heard on many of these public radio stations. What's that guy that we were talking about last week? Harry Shearer, right?
Yes, Harry Shearer.
Yes, he does a show called Le Show. Isn't that clever?
Well, he's done one.
But he has a thing called Apologies of the Week.
Oh, yeah.
We have a couple of apologies here that we should make note of. One of them is the Toronto Star, which it was so embarrassed about something that happened that they're now holding training sessions for reporters. And as I understand it, this was a social media mix-up, right? They misunderstood the timeline on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They saw a member of parliament who seemed to be, while on medical leave, vacationing with her daughter in the Caribbean.
Correct.
And it turns out that it popped up on her Facebook timeline months after she actually had been
there. Oh, not months. It was years. It was back in 2008. You know, if you're on Facebook, you know that every once in a while, you'll suddenly start getting comments on a photo that you posted months or years ago. And that's exactly what happened here. That's understandable. You know, that's confusing. The real problem is that the Toronto Star ran the story without the woman's comment, without the member of parliament's comment. You're just asking for trouble if you don't, you know, subject your entire thesis to the person you're targeting. It's so basic that the Toronto Star should be holding training
sessions.
Should
everybody who's affected always be contacted? Let me give you an example. The Berkshire Eagle, which I write for every Saturday, I write the Saturday column. It has a front page.
This should be good. Yes,
a front page story or a prominent story about how there's another radio station, a public radio station other than WMC, coming into one of our many markets, and they mention WAMC as already being there, but they don't call the president of WAMC, me, to get a reaction to their being there. Now, I would have said what I always say, which is, as Chairman Mao says, let 1,000 flowers bloom, because it's the only thing you can say. You may be ticked off about it, but you're going to do the principle and thing. But you would think that they would call the station that's most affected by it.
I agree.
Particularly, though, with a piece like Toronto, where they are actually making an accusation. And you can say, well, and we've all, as editors, encountered this where a reporter says, well, I called and she didn't call me back. Well,
Not acceptable. Did
you call? How hard did you try?
Oh, yeah,
did you
go
knock on the door?
That. Yeah, we all suspect that when it's we say around here a lot, and we call a lot, and they say, we don't get anything back. We say, we're very careful about it. We say, not in time for this broadcast.
Yeah.
They didn't reply in time for this broadcast.
You know, this is a story that impugns a woman's reputation. I think it's probably something criminal. It's fraud if she's taking money for a medical leave and didn't really need it. Mm-hmm. These are really serious charges. And you go much beyond making a lot of phone calls. You send a telegram. You knock on her door. You send a notice, a letter saying, you know, we're running this story on this date. We need to hear from you to get your side. Yeah. You go above and beyond. You have to.
We have gone so far, we've sent telegrams to people. You can't really send telegrams anymore.
Yeah.
We've gone knocking on doors. We've sent, we've gone back to lawyers who years earlier represented someone.
Registered letters we've used.
You really have to do it. But they did not do that at the Toronto Star. And the result is they're doing a series of workshops for reporters, reminding them about fairness. Second apology of the week comes from Howard Kurtz, whom we have often quoted in this show, perhaps the most prominent media, one of the two or three most prominent media critics in the U.S., who has a show now on CNN called Reliable Sources, who apparently...
Or unreliable sources.
Some would say. He apparently bungled a story about Jason Collins, his coming out story in Sports Illustrated. I don't quite recall exactly what it was that Howard Kurtz said.
Howard Kurtz said that he had forgotten to mention that he had once been engaged to a woman in this whole uproar that he's coming out now as a gay man, that he had underplayed this. And in fact, that's not true. It was in the very article that Howard Kurtz supposedly read.
He didn't read far enough.
He didn't read carefully enough.
Now, Howie Kurtz has, coincidentally, perhaps,
you
left...
You say Howie, you know him well?
No, it's just what he goes by.
Oh, okay.
That is the name that he uses.
I have been on that show years ago, and, you know, he worked for years with my sister and went to school with her, so I do know him, and I really have liked...
You can call him Howie.
I can call him. Yeah, when I got fired, he wrote the first story about it, but he actually has been an excellent commentator on media. I'm sorry to see this happen, and I do believe it's the reason that most people have given for the lapse is that he's just stretched so far. He's writing books. He's working on a website. He's now working on the
CNN TV show.
Exactly.
Right. He's left Newsweek.
For all
piece,
of us.
But...
There's check, check, and recheck.
Check,
I
check,
mean, you know, it's
recheck.
Easy enough to write.
But here's the thing. I mean, yeah. His apology was humongous, I think.
Yeah, he went out of his way.
I thought he did it in a good way. He subjected himself to being interviewed by two other media commentators on what he did wrong. I thought the format was great. The answer's not so much.
Yes.
You know, he just said, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
I'll do better. But I do have to, once again, you know, the media is so varied in its response to these kinds of things. Do you remember when Fareed Zakaria was accused of plagiarism, mm-hmm. which is, I think, worse than mm-hmm. even repeated mistakes? And they gave him some time off without pay, and then he's back doing everything again. Howie Kurtz gets fired. You know, I don't see a continuum there.
Oh, do you think he was fired? Is that right?
Yeah, he was. He was fired from the Newsweek Daily Beast.
Yeah, I think he might have been ready to leave there anyway. That's an interesting question. But it's interesting. I still believe that he's a terrific commentator. I'd be interested. I'm still going to be paying attention to what he writes, but it is of some interest. Hey, before we leave this show this week, we need to talk just a little bit about the business of media. I know people sometimes get annoyed that we talk about that, but here's an interesting thing. If you watch television news, there's an analysis here from one of the regular sources who follows the TV news business, who says that local television news is just 5 years behind where newspapers have been, and that the downturn that has gripped newspapers that we, some of us are all too familiar with, is just about to hit television news.
How so? You mean in terms of numbers of people who
revenue.
Work there?
No, yeah. Revenue. Yeah, okay. And the revenue, therefore, in classified ad revenue accounted for 35% of newspapers' total ad revenue in 2005. Last year, that 35% had dropped to 18%.
Right, but so, do television stations take classified ads?
No, but they have their comparable. Would be political advertising and car advertising, both of which can be delivered more precisely by digital means or even by direct mail.
Interesting.
And for car advertising, one of the great advantages actually that newspapers still have, one of the reasons we have a lot of car advertising, is that you can show a lot of prices. You can list 50 cars in a single page of newspaper advertising.
A double truck a day.
It's great stuff. We love those car ads. But it is a real peril to local news operations, which are already pressed. I mean, it's not as though television news hasn't been in trouble already. But this could be. And here's the fact that newspapers have a head start now on television in their digital presentation, while they're all working on it and doing better. Our local TV stations in the Capital Region, for example, a couple of them are really deeply into social media, which is very good for them. But really, the websites of newspapers have tended to be really out there in front in one community after another across the country.
And can you show the boss and the boss's daughter and granddaughter getting up there and saying, come to my place, guys, to buy a book, to buy a car, in the same way on digital as you see them on television? I've often thought that the way they sell those ads is say, hey, and also I'll get your granddaughter on.
That's pretty amazing. Well, actually, you can. The story in the advertising world these days is the rise of video in digital advertising.
Sure.
This is going to be 2013 is the year that video advertising really takes off online. And some of us are still waiting. When does video take off on our websites in terms of news? Because it has not yet happened. We don't yet find that it draws traffic.
Interesting, Rex. Sorry to interrupt. That the Hearst, I just read, the Hearst Corporation, your corporation, has just gotten a big shot digital guy to run all the magazine digital stuff.
Which is an interesting development. They're taking a guy from the pure play world, that's the term that means just the digital stuff without legacy media attached, and they're making him the president of all the digital sites for all the magazines, Cosmopolitan and Esquire and Popular Mechanics and Good Housekeeping, the Oprah magazine. And that's a really interesting development, that they are going to separate those sites from the legacy magazines.
And of course, I read it because I know and love your work, Rex. I was looking to see whether they were doing that with the newspapers that they own, but they weren't.
Not quite so extensively, but there is a school of thought that says that the only way that the new industries can develop appropriately is if you separate them off from the legacy, not in just the media, but in all industries. This is teaching from Harvard Business School.
Well, what do they know?
Interesting.
Well, there's some research.
There's always research.
There's always research. That's how people get PhDs, isn't it, Alan?
Watch it.
Anyway, any last points before we leave this week's program?
Not from me.
No, you have nothing else. We'll be back next week with more thoughts in the media. Remember, you can join us by writing to media@wamc.org, or you can write to us at 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York. What's your zip code?
1-2-2-0-6,
right?
1-2-2-0-6.
Glad to help. Yeah. Who works around here?
Who uses mail anymore?
But I wanted to say
newspapers are in trouble, so is the post office.
Newspapers have got to watch themselves, because the last thing I'm going to say is it wasn't three brothers who apparently did this dirty stuff in Cleveland, but one brother, after the newspapers had reported all along, it was all three.
Ah! Watch yourself.
Somebody has to eat a little mud.
Okay, then. Notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policies and actions.